working class has dramatically changed and is heavily Mexican. And in fact, there's an entire brown belt within Chicago of a dozen neighborhoods on the southwest side that are over majority Mexican. So there's been, in effect, Mexican migration saved Chicago. And unlike cities like Detroit or Indianapolis or Cleveland that also experienced post-industrial decline but never welcomed in large numbers of Latinos, by Chicago welcoming in Latinos, specifically Mexicans, it has been able to revitalize itself. So I think that's one of the key things. The other thing that's important to understand is the dispersion of the Mexican population. Two-thirds of all of the Mexicans, of those 1.5 million Mexicans, are not in the city of Chicago. They're in the suburbs and in the collar counties of Chicago. And there are now more than a dozen suburban towns around Chicago that have more than 50% Latino population, yet they have no Latino elected officials at the mayoralty levels or proportionally in the city councils. So the future of political representation and power of the Mexican and Latino community is really in the suburbs of Chicago. And that's true in cities across the country. It is in the suburbs that are the growth areas. The other important thing is that because the community is so young, the college age population has dramatically changed. 32% of all the college and graduate professional school students in Chicago are Latino, 32,000 of them, including 20,000 Mexicans, which means that's the future of higher education for not only Chicago, but for many cities across the country. So these are just some of the findings that we had in this report.
Juan, we're going to link to your report. Juan Gonzalez co-wrote the report, Fuerza Mexicana, the past, present, and power of Mexicans in Chicagoland, for the Great Cities Institute at UIC. That does it for our show. Juan is also the author of Harvest of Empire, History of Latinos in America. Happy birthday, Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, September 30th at 5:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify a meeting is being held.
We want you to join us Saturday, September 28th from 2 to 5 p.m. for a special live broadcast during the Compassionate Living Festival, happening from noon to 6 p.m. at Norse Hall in Portland. Our coverage will dive into how sustainable choices, like adopting a plant-based lifestyle, can help fight climate change and protect our planet's resources. You'll hear from environmental activists, sustainability leaders, and explore eco-friendly vendors focused on making a difference. That's September 28th, 2 to 5 p.m. live on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO, 90.7 FM in Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:03 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Living in the wasteland of the free, we got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines.
Good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Roland. Be with you until 9 o'clock this morning. Just like every weekday morning, you get a talk show, live call-in talk show. One of the few places to get that in the Portland area, certainly from a progressive slant. Anyway, I'm here. I'm solo, looking to engage you in conversation at 503-231-8187. That, of course, was Iris DeMent, and I began playing that after Kamala Harris started using the watchword freedom. It's kind of like the buzzword of her campaign, and thinking, and even more now, even much more now, the hypocrisy, really, and now just the obscenity, really, I'm sorry, but using that word while we are funding genocide and mass destruction in now Lebanon, the West Bank, Gaza. It's and of course, we do know that during a president, during the run up and right after a presidential campaign, that's when Israel is historically proven to use their military machine to cynical use to get whatever they can, do whatever, wreak whatever destruction they can before they might be held to mild accountability. Is there going to be some accountability if Kamala Harris is elected? That's a good question. Anyway, I had a whole other topic, a whole other topic that I really got excited about, did a bunch of research on, that I wanted to go to. It kind of got blown out of the water listening to Jill Stein and Butch Ware on Democracy Now! I imagine I get quite a few people bleeding over from Democracy Now! Continue to listen just to see if I'm worth listening to this morning. Excuse me. If this catches your interest as you're going about your day, maybe, getting ready for work, heading off to work, doing something in the kitchen, doing whatever you're doing, that, you have other choices, and we do appreciate the choice you make to listen to KBOO. And especially those of you who contributed to our recent membership drive. We really appreciate your support. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And you can continue to give us your support by going to kbo.fm. Click on the donate button. And, help us out. So, as I said, I appreciate your sticking with KBOO this morning and listening to me. I hope it's of interest. And you can make it even more interesting by calling in at 503-231-8187. Anyway, the reason it was blown out of the water, I wanted to talk about some really complex, deep, difficult things. The mega machine and the rise of the mega machine from the destruction of small kinship groups. Anyway, I can talk about that if that strikes your fancy, but hearing Jill Stein, the clarity with which Jill Stein expresses herself, and Butch Ware as well, and just puts in stark relief we can characterize it, defend it, justify it however we want, but the reality is we'll leave Trump aside, but the Harris campaign is the rhetoric, what it's putting forward is really rather tepid. Of course, on some issues, and those are the bread and butter issues that she hopes to win on, and not to dismiss any of these, of course, but a woman's right to control her own body. I didn't really actually think I was going to talk specifically about those points, so I don't have them right off the top of my head. But you know what they are, the things that the Democrats are good on, and are way better. Against voter suppression, being a more a multiracial, multiethnic, tolerant, gender rights, transgender rights. All the issues that the Democrats are legitimately good on, and we know that. And before Robbie calls in to talk about Jill Stein, that might be him right now, I was hoping we could get other people first. So Robbie, if you're listening, maybe just step back for a little bit. Some people have actually expressed concern that you get an outsized share of the time, which, you know, it's having an hour program and often having a guest and having to, you know, get the guest to flesh out what they want to talk about first. And you know, when I introduce a topic, it takes up time, and there's really not that much time in an hour to have really lengthy conversations with each listener. It's just the nature of the beast. And if I had 3 hours like Tom Hartman, haha, I don't think I could possibly even do that, but I could, and we should have such things. We should have multiple radio stations that are offering you, you know, we should have a station like Air America once was, devoted to a live call-in talk radio. We should have a local station that only that is devoted to local progressive talk radio here in Portland. But alas, we live in a corporate capitalist-dominated society that doesn't leave much oxygen in the room, or money for that matter, for such things. But we can talk about that. But yeah, I just want to get so hearing Jill Stein, it was kind of a splash of cold water to me, just to hear her, to hear a national political figure, even of, you know, such minor stature. We must look at cold hard reality, just by the nature, as she so well elucidated that the system is so, the duopoly, the existing system is so set up against having third parties, and they work so hard to not allow them. It really was a wake-up call to me that, you know, I actually was involved in the early existence of the Green Movement in the United States back in the mid to late 80s. I actually went to like a national organizing meeting in the Bay Area, before the Pacific Green Party came into existence here. And I haven't been involved, with the Green Party. You know, I'm not involved in nuts and bolts politics. So I don't have a right to speak about this stuff, but like to hear some people from the local Greens. But what I do know is that the Greens early on got mired in a lot of infighting. I know that's true. And I think that did hinder their development. I know that, there's the difficulties of having a third party are immense. I do think that there's some self-limiting factors that have been at play with the Greens. But again, since I'm not really involved, I don't want to stick my neck out too far on that. I know that historically there's been resistance on the radical left to the idea of sort of like what initially was certainly put forward as an environmentalist party. You know, I think the Greens early on got really hip. In fact, if you look at their platform, if you look at the 10 key values, the really probably over elaborated Green Party platform that got published as a little booklet in the late 80s, very, very good on all social justice issues, environmental justice issues, racial justice, gender justice, very, very good, very solid. So it's a complex field, but I did want to just to put out there that I felt like when Robbie did bring that up a couple weeks ago, I gave short shrift. I basically fell into the kind of almost default position of, hey, listen, you know, the reality is that we've got these two major candidates that, you know, they're, one of them's going to win. It's like that's just the way it is, you know, which unfortunately is true. And as I said, we keep finding ourselves back in that same position, you know. And as I, you know, and I think, and as I said then, I'm going to get to our first caller, Santiago, in just a second. Hold on. Is, you know, that it started out as kind of a grassroots, but kind of having sort of a little bit of the elitism that came from out of the sort of the dominant kind of environmentalist thrust at the time, the Green Party. So it kind of started out as a somewhat, you know, even on the left, a somewhat fringe reality. But as I said, I mean, it's certainly, if you look at what they really stand for, if you look at their platform, it's not that. But it never gained the character, you know, it never really came out of kind of a more popular ferment that, say, like the Die Grünen in Germany. They came much more out of a real ferment, you know, a lot out of the anti-nuclear movement, which was so strong back then, and other strands, and I don't know, maybe other people have more cogent thoughts on this, but I did want to say again that I guess I kind of apologized to Robbie for giving short shrift to the candidacy, and the reality is that third party candidates, as Jill Stein, that's one of the takeaways that I really got, is they just their fight for their existence is a political struggle in and of itself, and it shouldn't be, and so much of their energy has to go into that. That probably takes away from their ability to get their message out further and be more. Anyway, so let's go to, and please, you know, Santiago calls a lot, and I always like to hear him. Robbie calls a lot. There's a few people call. I'd like to hear people who don't call so regularly, 503-231-8187. So let's hear what Santiago has to say. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. You know, I agree that, I agree with the sentiment that one party is going to win. And, you know, and it is what it is. I understand that's a material reality on the ground. But I think the main thing is, and what I really have taken from a lot of folks, you know, that I organize with, is that, you know, it really doesn't matter who wins if we don't have, like, a people's movement on the ground. Because here's the fact of the matter, is that Jill Stein's running mate, when they talked on the Breakfast Club about 2 weeks ago, and, you know, and was going back and forth with one of the hosts, who's basically takes a lot of her talking points from the Democratic Party. The one thing that he pointed out is that, you know, that fascism and imperialism are two sides of the same coin. Fascism points inward, imperialism points outward. We can say, okay, fine, if we capitulate to the idea that only two people are going to win and we have to vote for the lesser of two evils, we need to name those two evils. The evil of the Republican Party is that it is a white Christian nationalist fascist party. But the Democratic Party is an intersectional imperialist party. If we stop the fascists, but we don't address the imperialism, then it doesn't really matter, because there are people who are going to, it'll, defeating the fascists here will create relative stability in the imperial core for a time, but as long as the imperialism is still facing outward, it's only a matter of time before we get a more competent, less buffoonish, more polished, more charismatic version of Trump, who will be able to bypass all the red flags. I mean, right now Trump is just tanking himself with all the stuff that he's got. His only saving grace may be that he put people in the Supreme Court, but that remains to be seen. But the fact of the matter is even if Kamala Harris wins, she is not ultimately interested in solving the actual root problems of what's going on. You can't police people into peace. You can't, you know, she she is a, I mean, she's very much a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, she's borrowing the Obama brand. I mean, just, I mean, on principle of being black, but also, like, kind of tapping into that hope and change. People are smart enough to know that hope and change didn't take us through 8 years, and in fact made the world a lot worse off in many ways. So without having a legitimate, like, people's movement on the ground, then there will fundamentally be no difference between having a Harris presidency or a Trump presidency. The only thing, the only difference being, is that Trump is more honest. It's easier to see what's going on when you have a moron who says all of the quiet parts out loud.
Well, you know, thank you for that very cogent expression of the fascism at home and imperialism abroad. And the, because I think it's all too evident, and you obviously see this, it's thrown in your face from your historical political perspective every day, that the, you know, the blindness of the vast majority of liberals and even some radicals to the nature of the, you know, that we've been so immersed in it so long that we're blinded to the nature of the imperial reality that we live in. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
Anyway, I there was a second part to that that just. That, oh, the people's movement on the ground, which, you know, I feel, not being like really a part of a people's movement on the ground, I feel like, I don't know, just like sort of like a lame sort of cheerleader when we need a people's movement. Not, and I'm not saying you're doing that, because I think you're probably more actively involved than I am, but it just feels a little hollow sometimes when I do it, because, yeah, I mean, that's the million-dollar question. How do we summon up something that seems, that all the signs seem to point to, like being, if not impossible, at least extremely, at least of the kind that I think you and I share something of the same vision of what that might look like? Because it's certainly not,
well,
it's certainly,
I mean,
not happening.
Well, I think part of it is that we've got to be patient. You know, the biggest problem with both the Democrats and the Republicans is that they are literally, like, rhetorically on fire. So, like, when you disagree with a lot of liberals, or you are critical of the liberal platform, they're like, oh, so you want Trump. And then it's the same thing on the red side. Like, if you're critical of Donald Trump's rhetoric, it's like, oh, so you want a Harris presidency. Like, there's a lot, in a lot of ways, there's no difference in how they're putting forward this sort of emergency. And so, like, being able to, we just have to be patient and to continually bring up the talking points that we need to in order to talk to people about, like, I mean, the biggest problem is that people don't see is that we're not addressing the boot, only the foot that goes in the boot. The boot is the problem.
Just as I said about Robbie,
sorry.
No. It's all good. But yeah, we really do. I got to be really careful myself, and it's hard to override people. Not override. It's hard to, you know, to interrupt somebody's flow of thought. You know, when you're, you know, you need to get out your full thought. And anyway, it is what it is. But thank you, Santiago. Always good to hear from you. We already have two people stacked up, and more probably on the way. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Blake. You are on the air.
Good morning. Thank you, Santiago. Thank you for letting me blab for a minute. And we have to stop listening to two loud parties. You know, we've been told this for a long time, as long as I can remember, and that the middle class is dying. And it's like, sorry to say it, yeah, people's movement, but it has to be. We have to see that capitalism is going to kill, like, just life as you know it. You have to have a plan. Bernie was it. I don't know what to say, but the system has to change, and patience, yes, but I don't see Jill Stein getting any more noise. I don't see Bernie. I need a leader. I need a party to join up with, and I'm going to keep saying that I think I know what's right, and that Kamala and Trump are wrong. And yeah, it was great to have a mirror like Trump hold it to our face and say, hey, you know, I mean, Dave Chappelle, smart guy.
Cut you off.
How do we change it?
Gotta cut
how
you
do
off.
We change?
Did you dump that? Okay. You can't use certain words on the air. We just dumped you, which means we go back and erase the whatever 15, 20 seconds so we don't hear whatever offending word. But you got to be really careful. You know, it's unfortunate we exist under the Federal Communications Commission, which has certain rules about certain language you can have on the air during certain hours. It's a real drag. But it's real, and you know, so you got to just pay attention. And we can't have that on the air. Before we go to Norm, looking forward to hearing you. Yeah, I mean, the idea of being patient, revolutionary patience, I think has been a term. You know, it's hard. You know, when you've got, you know, when, as I've said repeatedly, maybe too much, I don't know, that we have a climate emergency that maybe actually doesn't really give us any more time to turn it around. It's hard when you're in such this, you know, this pressure cooker of a situation. And then I respond to what Blake said. I'm looking for a leader in a party to join up with. Well, you know, I sometimes you just need to start doing things yourself within your circle. And see what happens. That's how the movements that I've seen started, actually. And then sometimes once you get some traction, you join up with other forces, like-minded or not quite so like-minded, who have similar objectives. Anyway, let's hear from Norm. Go ahead. Whoop. Norm's no longer with us. We have someone else up. Let's hear what we got next. Go ahead.
Hello?
Oh, ow. I was just a little loud in my headphones. Yeah, hello, who are you?
This is James.
Okay, James, what do you got to say?
We are anarcho-capitalists are really studying Marx because we see Marxism as enabling imperialists to traffic in slavery and wage genocide on the people. Do you know that in one of Marx's letters that he wrote that he advocated for black slavery?
Can you give me an exact citation for that?
It's one of his letters in that he wrote in German.
Give me an exact citation for it.
Kick History on YouTube has it. He's got everything cited. It's called Karl Marx. It's called The Real Karl Marx.
Yeah,
and it's
well,
on Kick History. And it,
yeah, I'm
and
sure.
It's on,
if you're just going to cite YouTube, I'm sorry. Anarcho-capitalism, you know, I have to exercise my own prerogatives to judiciously choose what we're going to talk about, and anarcho-capitalism is not.
Well, you're a Nazi.
Yeah, I guess I am.
You're okay. A Nazi.
All right, goodbye. I am a Nazi. Yeah. Anyway, you know, it takes too much time to unpack things like that, and I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess that is a little heavy-handed. Somebody else come in and join the conversation. God, be nice to have some female voices. Maybe the men could just stand back for just a second here. I mean, I could go on and, you know, and respond to this. I know what anarcho-capitalism is. I know where he's going with that. You know, maybe that sounds arrogant, but it's just not enough time of the day. You know, anarchism is not in favor of capitalism. If you believe in capitalism, you're certainly not an anarchist that I want to have anything to do with. And I think if you actually look at the roots, you know, from Kropotkin and on, I could have, be interested in have a conversation like that. They're just incompatible. So just from the get-go, sorry, James.
Anyway, looks like we got Robbie. I was waiting to hear from him. Again, it'd be really nice to hear from people who don't call in, but I always love to hear my regular callers. Hi, Robbie.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
I apologize for calling. I wasn't really wanting to, but you kind of mentioned me earlier, and I was wanting to weigh in a little bit. I appreciate you trying to... Right here? Got it. One second. Yeah, have a great day.
All right. We don't want your personal stuff. That's okay.
No, sorry. I actually just clocked out on my... lunch break right now, but basically the whole situation with the Green Party is that it's important to have, because I don't see anything else holding the Democrats to the left. I don't see the organizing that they say they're going to do. I don't see really anything coming from the Democrats. And so every so often, whenever these elections happen and people complain about the Green Party stealing votes, in reality, it's helping keep the Democratic Party somewhat to the left compared to what they would have been doing. And so I just wanted to say, you said like last week, you're like, oh, maybe I forget that there's these, what was it? You said that it's like, it's important that we have, you know, the Interior Secretary is, you know, native and has done some stuff. And it's just like those little bits of crumbs, I think, you know, that we keep going for is essentially this trap that we can't get out of now. And so I do believe that the three-party system, having a third party, is completely important. Even if you don't think that, you know, it's going to win. Clearly, I'm not voting for the Green Party to win, but I think that's kind of a weird... it's like a popularity contest that our American politics have done. And so now, because we've become complacent with the two-party system, we're going to be voting for the lesser of two evils, which has gotten us into this exact boat where the Democrats keep holding us center and then shifting us right.
What?
And so like, right now there is absolutely there isn't a difference between Trump and Harris, as far as I'm concerned. A lot of people think there is, but when you look at the policies that they are mentioning, I don't see a difference. I see her being tough on the border. I see her employing more ICE agents. I see her bombing Palestine and saying Israel has a right to defend itself. But somehow Democrats have in their mind that it's going to be better. And
well,
I
let
really
me just,
don't understand how.
Well, let me just push back on your comment about what we were talking, I was talking about, I believe, with Jacqueline Keeler about you know, the continuity of administrations and what it means for certain constituencies. I do think, I wish you would maybe look at this a little more closely, just like I look more closely at myself and my reaction about Jill Stein, and you know, I try to, you know, be honest with myself and correct myself. The idea that it's just crumbs to the Native American people who are, you know, some of the policies mean actually regaining land that had been stolen or expropriated, you know, generations ago, means, you know, crucial funding for
which
programs.
Land?
Huh?
I was just curious, which lands are we talking about?
Well, that's I would have to really there's a whole rebuying land back that's gone on under the Interior Department, and I don't have the specific examples, but there are examples. There's been consolidation.
You know,
I'm just saying it's important for those people. So you and I don't get defensive here, but I think you perhaps as a non-Native American don't feel that as quite intensely. I'm not saying that outweighs that these other considerations. I'm just saying that I think it's important to take these things into consideration as well as the bigger picture that you're focusing on.
Well,
that's all.
If I could weigh in a little bit, I actually do have enough Native American ancestry to collect a stipend, but I'm not enrolled in any tribe. And so, you know, that's a whole nother topic. But the idea that, you know, let me just, you know, and obviously I don't like Trump, but Trump also... he gave land to, you know, a whole Native American tribe that was not considered a tribe. But that's because this system is still happening. And I bet you haven't heard about that. But what I see is the same system doing exactly what it was going to do, whether it was Kamala, whether it was Trump. They're going to be doing the capitalist regime, which is the system that we have to break. And so this idea that somehow I'm against it, which is like, well, if more people said that.
No, I didn't say you're against it. All right. Listen, Rob, we've got to go on to some other people. We do need to respect the time. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I think we have a communication difficulty sometimes. I think maybe, anyway, I won't say what I was going to say, but I do appreciate, and you do prod and poke, and I think that's really good, and I think you know your overall points are valid, and I respect them. Anyway, let's hear what Shay has to say, and after Shay, lines will be open at 503-231-8187. Boy, it'd be nice to hear from some women. I know I can't just make that happen, but okay, well, good. That's anyway. Hi, Shay. What do you got to say?
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess I just figured I'd weigh in. I'm a young mother, and I don't put much hope in I don't really put any hope in electoral politics personally, but these are conversations that, you know, my family and my communities are having, and I actually did vote for Jill Stein back in the 2016, whatever that one was.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the last time I voted for a presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that Jill Stein is, the conversations are changing. You know, she's talking about things, and like you said, with a clarity that's refreshing and different. And I appreciate that, even though I don't have faith in the system. But I did just want to take a quick chance to gently push back on the idea that the Democrats are good on abortion, because this is something that I've been hearing a lot of people say, and I know that the party line, you know, is that abortion access should be available. But looking at their actions, you know, me and my communities have been, thankfully, we're in Oregon, right? And we still do have access to birth control and abortion here. But, you know, I have friends throughout the country and people who are part of my community in other places, doing work in other places. And it's horrifying what's happening. And people, you know, when you try to hold the Democrats' feet to the fire and be like, hey, what are you going to do about this? There's just every excuse in the book. And I think it's unconscionable, because when you look at what Trump did during his presidency, you know, it was executive order after executive order, right? And that was a dangerous precedent to set. But I don't understand why the Democrats act like they are completely helpless to do anything about abortion. And now they're holding it over our heads. Like, if you don't vote for us, you're going to lose agency over your body. And I think that is just so wicked. And I really don't think that they are going to, I just don't have any hope.
Right. No, I'd like to hear more. I just this thing that my Facebook friend and friend in person, Jeffrey St. Clair, wrote a number of hours ago, specifically to this, is he said, the Democrats are warning that Trump might use the Comstock Act to, quote, ban abortion nationwide on the first day of his presidency. The Comstock Act was passed in 1873. Since 1900, the Democrats have controlled the House, Senate, and White House for a total of 40 years and never repealed this odious law. If Trump pulls the trigger, it's because the Democrats left behind a loaded gun with no kid lock on it. Anyway, that's just one way of approaching what you're saying.
Yeah, I really think that they enable each other, and that this circus that happens every few years is just part of a propaganda machine. And I really respect Jill Stein for her efforts. It was interesting to hear her talk about how what was she saying? She was like, it's unfortunate that we have to participate in the presidential election.
No, that got me too, because one criticism I've had is that the Greens, but that's because, again, that's because I'm not really directly involved. But to me, the Greens is like they pop up every 4 years because of these conversations about that they're going to undermine the Democrats, whatever. But it seems to me from the outside, and it's probably not true, that they're kind of top heavy in terms of like focusing on electoral politics. But she says it's because of the rules that they actually have to participate. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and like she said, you know, the media is not going to show you a lot of what they're actually doing. But, you know, I don't want to take up too much time. And without being too inflammatory on the radio, I do just want to say, you know, ultimately, we, the people, have to take care of ourselves and each other. And I really am in favor of generalizing medical skills and knowledge, you know, like do skill shares, teach each other how to, you know, do stitches or bandage wounds, you know, learn how to grow herbs and what they're good for. And we just have to take care of each other, because these people, they just want money, and they're just going to keep on, you know, bombing as long as they can, is what I think, I'm afraid. So anyway, thank you.
Well, thank you, Shay. That's a refreshing perspective. Yeah, I mean, whether, you know, I just, one doesn't want to fall too far either into the despair that the imperial machine is just going to keep going on. We're just going to keep, Israel's continue to have impunity, et cetera, you know, and have a little sliver that maybe, you know, maybe the pressure that has been putting on, you know, will actually, change something within the Democratic Party. And I don't want to also, you know, fall into the Pollyannish, oh, you know, once she's elected, Harris is going to do this, this, and this. You know, those are neither of those, you know. Anyway, but just before we go to Chuck, hang on just another second. And other callers at 503-231-8187 after Chuck, who's coming up next. I thought it was really interesting. I don't know how, you know, it almost felt a little bit that they were overplaying that, but Butch Ware, the vice presidential Green candidate, was really strong on saying that the Democrats have already lost the election by themselves by not changing their policy on Israel, by not withholding arms shipments. They've alienated the Muslim vote, which is has been a growing constituency and happens to be a major, you know, significant minority constituency in some of the so-called battleground states, like Michigan, for example. And, you know, and it seems like the more this goes on, you know, I don't know, is that Israel's objective? Is that Netanyahu's objective in this, his political objective? I don't know. Anyway, let's go to hear what Chuck has to say. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Paul, can you hear me okay?
I do, perfectly.
Okay. You know that the Dems did some dirty poker to get the keep Jill Stein and Butch Ware off of the Nevada ballot line.
Yeah, they talked about that on the Democracy Now! This morning, yeah.
Okay, catch your drift. I missed that. So Oregon is considered a very, very safe state to vote for Jill Stein. If you have what people are calling the Trump derangement syndrome. You know what Trump derangement syndrome is? Have you heard of that one, Paul?
Yes.
Okay, so Trump derangement syndrome is how progressives freak out when Trump is ever mentioned. I'm in the Green Party, and the Green Party is upside down right now in Oregon. We don't have to go into that. Except I will say that voting for Jill is very safe. Jill is admirable for her. She's the only candidate who's resisting the Israeli annihilation of Gaza. She's the only anti-war candidate. So
there might be some others. So I don't know if there's like a socialist candidate or other. There might be some others.
Yeah, but they're not on the ballot.
Okay.
They're out
there. Oh, in Oregon. Yeah. Okay. Right on.
Yeah, in Oregon. I mean,
yeah.
And so, you know, who's going to win here? I mean, there's a whole nother question here of our electoral integrity. Can we be confident of I'm not even frankly confident that Trump actually really beat Hillary back in 2016.
That, you know, there are certainly doubts about that. And the anyway, I listened to Fresh Air last night interviewing people who were involved in the Mueller report. I mean, just the complexities of like trying to have some respect for due process. I was going to say the system, not the system, but some respect for due process, you know,
yeah.
even in a totally corrupt imperialist, you know, whatever system. And, you know, the Mueller report clearly did show that there was a Russian involvement, and that actually Trump elicited it, that, you know, they stopped short of saying that he colluded because he just invited it, basically. Anyway, and so the whole release of the emails, et cetera, et cetera, and then some of the machinations that went on in some of the various states. No, it's definitely. I mean, the number of the elections. I mean, even going back to Kennedy, apparently using the mafia to win the 60 election. Anyway,
right.
Whatever. There's been monkeying around with the elections for a long time but we're running out of time, so make your last point and let's go to our next caller.
Okay, well, I guess my last point is that there shouldn't be any consternation from a progressive who wants to really make a vote with some integrity. I think Jill definitely has it, and with her Butch Ware, but I guess that's really the extent of it. There's so much more that could be said about the state of our politics today.
We'll save it for another time. Good to hear from you. Call back another time. Always good to hear voices that are not so often heard. Looks like we got Tuasi next. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, I love KBOO, and I really appreciate you taking the time to make this show happen. So I just wanted to say thanks to KBOO, and thank you for doing this. You know, it takes organizations and people like me and KBOO to make the real changes, because no matter how you vote, it comes down to the everyday people. And, you know, when we work collectively to help each other out, you know, that's what historically has pulled us through, whether it's as an indigenous person, indigenous nations, or, the settler colonials that made it through the Great Depression. It was through common unity or community. So just thank you so much for building community. But on the note of the election, I was at Standing Rock, and that was ongoing during both Obama and Trump. And either one of those guys could have easily stepped in to stop it. And it's the same with the Biden administration. So if we look at an issue that's really important to me, Standing Rock, then we can see clearly that none of the administrations have stopped DAPL. And so if we, you know, pan out from that small view, the larger view of what's harming the planet is that the U.S. military pollutes so much. So if we look at the mainstream candidates and say, are either of these candidates going to effectively help mitigate the dangers of climate change? No, they're not working to slow down and stop the military pollution that's dooming us all.
No, I was actually one of the things I wanted to talk about. A report came back out in January. I think I have it actually queued up here about the emissions from Israel's war in Gaza have immense effect on climate catastrophe. That's from January in the sense, and you can add to that, you know, I've talked about the Ukraine war in light of that, you know, that there's just no, you know, we're continuing to play the same geopolitical games or slightly mutated since the fall of the Soviet Union, when, you know, the planet is burning and we have to, our everything has to change, but it's not, because they can't change. But the grinding of the military machines all over the world led by the United States is totally true.
If we look at the world in the lens of imperial versus fascistic, we're not going to be able to change the imperial stance regardless of which candidate we support. And regardless of which candidate we support, we're not going to be able to change the fascistic stance inside of our country, not through voting. What it comes down to is we have to do the actual work ourselves. So for me, what that looks like is being involved in the community or taking direct action to, say, mitigate climate change, and just doing the work. Because as long as we turn to the front of the room and look to the leaders in Washington, we're not fixing our own backyard, which is where we can actually do the things.
Right on. Go ahead.
Have a great day, everyone.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Right on. Thanks for calling. I was just going to say, as the time winds down, I have to actually shorten the allotted time. And, you know, I hate this because I consider myself an anti-authoritarian. However, some people might view that differently. Anyway, you know, we've had a lot of callers this morning, only one woman. I don't know what the reasons for that are. Maybe it's the way I present myself. I don't know. But anyway, I won't bemoan that because I love to hear my callers. And it looks like we have John up next and maybe somebody after that. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm going to still stick with Harris, despite, you know, what is this, the third time that Stein has run for president? And I do believe, you know, what democracy, you know, now was interviewing, you know, the candidates, that they probably have a pretty good foothold of being spoilers. Okay, we have Donald Trump. And if you don't think he's going to carry out everything he says, you are not listening. Because, you know, that old saying, if somebody says they're going to do it, believe them. And yes, I know the Democrats are this and that, but I think Harris is going to inject a lot of good things. However, you know, if, you know, Trump gets in there, he's not going to stop on an abortion issue. The abortion issue is just a springboard to repress everybody else. You know, if you can control 54% of the population, which I think the females have, then you're going to go for it. You're going to have absolutely jackboot, you know, iron fist, you know, policies.
I wish when people, you know, I can agree with everything you're saying, but I wish we'd be try to be a little more inclusive and take into account what some of the thrust has been in the conversation, which is that the imperial military machine that the U.S. has been running this game for so many decades now to the detriment of everybody. There doesn't seem to be any signs of that changing. And
no, it probably never will.
We're all gonna burn up in the next few years because the climate is changing so fast. So you know, we got to keep our you know, I think we have to include all these things. You know, I'm not saying vote for this person, vote for that person, but trying to keep a view of the overall reality that we're in. And, you know, I agree with what Tuasi said. I agree with what Shay said, that, you know, community efforts is perhaps the one place we can really make a real change. But on the other hand, my view is that's going to be like, I hate to say it, you know, like, but pissing in the wind, you know, in the face of this huge, vast juggernaut of planetary changes that we've let loose. So, you know, it's like, where do you choose your focus? You choose your focus on, I think what Santiago said, is the only possibility is actually a real people's movement. And, you know.
Yeah, but how can you do it when you have one out of five people who are illiterate in this country?
Well, I don't know, but we start by where we're at, and let's see something happen right here in Portland. Anyway, thank you for calling.
Yeah, okay, bye.
We got time for one last short caller, possibly. Jeremy, what do you got to say? Good morning.
Hi. speaker. So, yeah, I just want to quote, I think, the most important third-party candidate ever, which is Eugene Debs, railroad labor leader who got a million votes out of, I think, only 10 million cast when he was in prison for resisting World War One. And he said it is better to vote for something you don't, something you want and not get it, than to vote for something you don't want and to get it. Now, if I was in North Carolina, I'd be voting for Harris. I'd be, you know, voting for the evil corporatist cop, you know, planet destroying, lying, flip-flopping on fracking. I can go on and on about her. She's awful. But in Oregon, I think I can vote for Stein. I'm not 100% sure, because I also want the popular vote to be as overwhelming as possible. But I loathe Harris so much that I think I'm safe in Oregon, you know, and I would be in, I guess, California too.
And don't we wish we wouldn't have to keep having the same damn conversation every exactly. 4 years?
Well, the point is, what else are you doing? The thing is, Trump is so overwhelming. If it wasn't Trump, if it was just, I don't know, you know, Romney, you know, someone who would have shaved my head at private school or you know, and hates working people. If it was just, you know, your normal evil Republican, then you know, what the hell? Why bother voting for some normal evil Democrat? But Trump is a Nazi of a different color. And the Christian right in America is overwhelmingly terrifying.
I agree. And that's kind of the one of the continuing sort of hidden dimensions, this crypto-Christian nationalist fascist presence that has worked its way into the Supreme Court. And for
exactly.
some strange, you know, how did they get so powerful? Anyway, thank you, Jeremy. We've got to let you go. We are out of time just about. Yeah, well, that turned into an interesting conversation. Again, very male-dominated. If someone has any, you know, like to get actually a female co-host eventually here. Well, I got one once a month, which is great. I think that she does tend to elicitate more female callers. Maybe that is it. Anyway, I don't know. I don't want to get too deep down that one, but I did want to talk about the Google data center in the Dalles and the fact that they're bringing up, they're resurrecting Three Mile Island for Microsoft's artificial intelligence. Now, can you imagine? So that was what spurred this thoughts of talking about the mega machine and how the, you know, this all-enveloping mechanical monster that we have developed and become sort of adjuncts to, you know, as Karl Marx pointed out so far back that you know, it's taken on a life of its own, like HAL in 2001, A Space Odyssey. And that's certainly the dangers that people see in AI, but the hidden dangers of the so-called seemingly immaterial information realities, the internet and artificial intelligence, is that they're wiping away the gains that we have made from so-called renewable energies, which is a whole other question, the paradoxes and hypocrisies within that. But it's wiping away all the gains that we have within that by upping our electricity use by many factors. Anyway, that's the last thought I'll leave you with. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for Ty for running the board. Thanks for all our great callers. Bye-bye, everybody.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines, and their speech is growing increasingly unkind.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States. And you're listening to KBOO Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it